Chapter 38, about the terrible things which happened in the beautiful valley called Nameless. It seemed to Christian and Big Tiger as if they had always lived in the desert. They felt at home quickly, because there life is reduced to its very simplest. There was nothing at all but the hard ground to ride on and the sky to look at. In the sky, the stars were twinkling, and as the moon had not yet risen, Good Fortune had to be careful not to lose his way. Once more, he had no other guide than the narrow camel track to which he had to keep. But Good Fortune was happy and satisfied. He knew this route from other people's account of it just as well as if he had already traveled it himself. Of course, he knew the Silk Road in the south better. It was a better road, too. And one met somebody on it almost every day. But Greencoat was traveling there with the truck. Indeed, he might be in Sing Sing Ha already. There is really no reason why I should care, thought Good Fortune. But then it seemed to him that there might be one, and he decided he would turn into the Silk Road as soon as he should reach the Xinjiang frontier. Perhaps at Ming Shui, he thought. Then he turned around to Affliction, who was riding behind him. Do you know Ming Shui? He asked. Affliction gave a start, but quickly pulled himself together. I've never heard of the place, he lied bravely. Where is it? Asked Big Tiger. Just where the province of Kansu ends and Xinjiang begins, explained Good Fortune. There's an old frontier fortress out in the middle of the desert. Is there anything special about that old fortress? Asked Christian anxiously. Not exactly, replied Good Fortune. It's fallen into ruins, but you get to Tsing Tsing Ha in a good 2 days' ride from there. I think it would be a good place for us to stop and look around a bit. We think so, too, said Christian and Big Tiger. Then they fell silent, and because it was night and none of them had a watch, the time began to drag, and Christian wished they would strike camp here and make a fire, for he was freezing. True, he had a coat, but he wouldn't wear it, for Big Tiger had none, so they both froze. The stars glittered, and their feet got colder and colder in the stirrups. An hour passed, and then another, and Christian began to think caravan life was a hard one. He felt he couldn't sit in the saddle any longer, and was just going to ask Big Tiger whether he thought it permissible to walk for a while, or whether walking was totally against the rules for caravans, when Affliction slipped down from his camel, took it by the reins, and led it behind them. Thereupon, Christian and Big Tiger leaped from their saddles as if at a word of command, and the poodle was overjoyed to have company again, especially as it was still on a leash. I was afraid, confessed Big Tiger, that it might not be honorable to go on foot when you're a caravan. I also thought that one could only ride, said Christian. Affliction was very much astonished. You don't ask a traveler how he's covered 1,000 li, he said, as long as he gets there. 7 stars taught us, said Christian, that our legs are meant only for riding, not for walking. That may well be true of Mongols, said Affliction. They have themselves tied to their horses when they're tired. What's that you're saying? Cried Good Fortune, dismounting too. Moonlight wouldn't be called Little Paw if he too hadn't walked one time. Affliction, who did not know the story, asked Good Fortune to tell it to him. But just then Good Fortune stood still, and the poodle began to growl. There's someone around, said Good Fortune, lowering his voice. He's got a horse with him, whispered Affliction. Then he's a red beard, Good Fortune concluded, but he remained quite calm. Why do you stop? Cried a voice out of the darkness. But then the poodle began to bark loudly, and Christian had to hold him. They could no longer hear each other, so loud was the barking, and by the time it had ceased and the dog was only gnashing his teeth, the stranger had galloped up to them. He stopped his horse right in front of Good Fortune. Is your journey easy and good? He asked. While saying this, his eyes traveled from one to the other until they came back to Good Fortune. Easy and good, replied Good Fortune. Who are you? The man shook his head over such an improper question, and his pigtail swung round. This apparently meant disapproval, but they could not see clearly. I have 2 words to say to you. announced the man. When I have said them, I must ride on. Speak, said Good Fortune. Sitting upright in his saddle, the man continued in a singing drawl. Moonlight sends greetings to Good Fortune. Compass Mountain, Big Tiger, and another, whose name I forget. The other is quite unimportant, interjected Affliction. Moonlight says a son must go whence his father sends him, that is past. A friend shall go whence his friend bids him go, that is now. Where I have been sitting just now waiting for you, a fresh track leads northward. Moonlight bids Good Fortune follow that track. He stopped speaking and turned his horse. Bolvo? He asked brusquely. Bolna, replied Good Fortune resignedly. That being so, said the man in a more friendly tone, may I give you a bit of advice? Pitch your tent here and wait for daylight. The trail is faint, and you might lose it in the night. But ride on early, for there's neither food nor water here for the camels. You'll find both by midday, however. Is that all? Asked Good Fortune. What more do you expect? The name of the well, said Good Fortune. It is called Nameless. Oh, I see, said Good Fortune, bowing farewell, for the man was haughty, and he had a gun. Sleep well, cried the stranger, urging his horse on and riding back the way he had come. Good Fortune turned round diffidently to Big Tiger and Christian. All of a sudden, he was no longer the leader who decided about the road to be taken and the camping place for the night. Someone else had taken over command. It was different from taking orders under General Wu. The general would say, Good Fortune, drive me to Hui La Sin. Good Fortune would drive to Hui La Sin. And the general would say, Stop, I'm getting out here. That was all clear and simple. And it was natural for Good Fortune to obey, for behind the orders of General Wu, there was nothing personal, only the map with the little flags and the abacus. But here, someone spoke to him from afar, out of the darkness of the night, and requested a service as a friend. But behind the request stood a threat. Nothing had been said of what would happen if Good Fortune refused, but refusal was out of the question. Unload, ordered Good Fortune angrily, and Affliction proceeded to set up the tent. The ground was hard and smooth. He swept the stones aside, drove in the pegs, pushed the roof pole through the rings and fastened the stays. It was quick work. Meanwhile, Christian and Big Tiger laid a line on the ground, fastened it with tent pegs, and led the five camels up to it, placing them at the correct distance apart. When they cried, Zook, Zook, and the camels lay down, they tied them for the night. Good Fortune disappeared and came back with an armful of tamarisk branches, just enough for a fire. The moon rose like a ball of fire over the horizon. Then it turned yellow and finally shone pale and still over the dead landscape. I was happy riding to my heart's content between the four seas, said Good Fortune. I wanted to strike camp where I thought fit and where it pleased me to do so. Must someone always come to order a fellow about? Affliction stirred a pinch of salt into the boiling tea. That has always been my lot. I've never known anything else but to be ordered about, he said. And what does your grandfather say? Inquired Good Fortune. When superior power oppresses, declared Big Tiger, the time has come to be silent, and the straight road would not be the shortest. If that's so, said Good Fortune, we must take the crooked road. Your grandfather has proved himself a sterling source of good counsel. They drank tea and warmed their hands at the little fire. When Good Fortune said, We have only 6 hours to sleep, they gathered together all the covers they had. The felt floor covering from Olantore they laid over the ground. Christian and Big Tiger got under the one fur coat, and Affliction and Good Fortune shared Affliction's top coat. If only our dog doesn't bite his leash through, said Big Tiger. He'll eat it up, said Affliction. The 13 grains of millet feeding doesn't suit everybody. He's no ordinary dog, Christian objected. He knows he has to guard the camels and ourselves. Tinger metne, said Good Fortune. The poodle yawned loudly. He was much too tired to gnaw his leash. Before sunrise next morning, Good Fortune was already out searching for tamarisk wood. While Affliction made the breakfast, Christian and Big Tiger saddled. The poodle got a bowl of lukewarm water, and by the time the sun was up, all were in the saddle. The region looked different by daylight. The hills, which the darkness had hidden, were all visible, and the tamarisks looked as if a child had stuck them here and there on a sandcastle. To the north were blue mountains, their jagged peaks floating on the morning mist. "Where is the trail?" asked Christian, as Good Fortune turned aside from the caravan track. "Watch out for it," muttered Good Fortune. Affliction halted his camel, and the pack camel stopped too. "As the bad business has begun," he said, "we must watch out and let nothing escape us." "I've noticed nothing," said Big Tiger. "Is there something?" asked Christian. Affliction looked after Good Fortune, but Good Fortune was riding on, and one could see that he was watching out as hard as he could. "There are horses' tracks here, as well as camel tracks," said Affliction. "Two of them are going northward, and Good Fortune is following them. The others accompany the caravan track westward, and those no longer concern us, at least not for the present." They rode on together and could see the hoof marks of two horses wherever Good Fortune's camel had not trodden on them. One hoof mark was heavier than the other. "That's the stallion," said Christian. "Moonlight and Thunderbolt rode along here," said Affliction in a low voice. "But before they turned northward, they met Mr. Ma and the other man who is accompanying the caravan. Perhaps there was a second or even a third Redbeard there, too. Over there, where there are a lot of hoof marks," they stopped and talked, "and they didn't dismount, for there are no footprints. Then Moonlight and Thunderbolt rode north, and the caravan went on, and the fellow who wouldn't tell us his name waited for us." "We admit we were unobservant," said Big Tiger. "From now on," promised Christian, "we'll use our brains better." "May I ask what you two think of the situation?" inquired Affliction. "You see, we three are now in the same boat, and the wind is beginning to rise." "You mean," said Big Tiger, "what the men had to say to each other, and why Thunderbolt and Moonlight left the caravan road?" "That's just it," said Affliction uneasily. "When it comes to guessing hidden reasons, few are clever and many are stupid." "One person couldn't get to the bottom of this alone," Big Tiger admitted modestly. "I think Moonlight and Thunderbolt did not want to go by the caravan road at all, but when they saw the fresh camel tracks, they rode after them to see who they had in front of them." "I knew," cried Affliction, "that you could guess hidden things." "After they had spoken to Ma," said Christian, "they rode north, to reach the place where Gunshuk is waiting for them with fresh horses. You know, four horses, too few and too many." "That's just what I don't like," sighed Affliction, "that yes and no in one." "No great harm in that," said Big Tiger reassuringly. "But why have we got to ride after the two of them now?" "Because Moonlight doesn't want us to travel with Mr. Ma's caravan. He has something special in mind for us." "Probably some first-class misfortune," said Affliction. "Ah, we four are indeed to be pitied." The morning passed. A wind had risen, and little white clouds were scurrying across the sky from west to east. It was all Good Fortune could do to keep the trail in sight, not because of the wind, but because the ground was becoming stonier. They were reaching the foothills of the mountains, which had looked blue and hazy in the dawn. Between the ranges of hills, the lake beds were dried up clay with deep cracks. As long as the trail led across them, the hoof marks were distinctly visible. But once past them, the trail was lost in a stony slope, and Good Fortune sought for it in vain. Suddenly he halted. "It can't be helped," he said. "Here's a hoof mark," cried Christian, pointing to a little spot of earth between the stones. "Wild asses," said Good Fortune scornfully. Where there are wild asses, declined Affliction, the world is at an end, and there's an end of hope, too, of course. There must be grass around here, said Good Fortune. Grass means water, and water means, well, it doesn't matter what it means. Anyway, we must turn back. We've lost the trail. He turned his camel, and they all rode down the stony slope again to the dried-up lake bed. When they came back to the spot where Moonlight's and Thunderbolt's tracks could be seen, Good Fortune dismounted and walked, watching the ground step by step. At times, he thought he saw a track, but then he would come to a spot where there wasn't a speck of earth or sand. The wretched stones covered everything. Through them, some scrub and heath-like plants and a few thistles had pierced their way. Mounting his camel again, he said to Christian, "Let the dog free. We shall ride back to the caravan track, and he won't run away from us then." "Bolna," cried Christian, jumping down from his camel. "The dog will be glad." "He'll be the ruin of us," prophesied Affliction. The poodle jumped with joy when Christian took off the leash. Then the retreat began. Good Fortune rode on in front, and the poodle ran far ahead. The ground was smooth and stoneless, and when the poodle turned round and barked to tell everyone how happy he was, he swept the brown, fissured ground with his tail, but no dust swirled up. Nothing swirled up but a thin red ribbon, and this the poodle grabbed. It fell at his feet, and when he'd picked it up and turned it round a few times with his paws, he sniffed it earnestly. Then he stood up and barked proudly, as he had done when he found Christian's fur coat. "What have you there, dog?" asked Good Fortune. "It's sad," said Affliction. "It's the remains of some dead person." "Rather small remains," said Good Fortune ironically. "It's nothing of the kind," said Christian. "The little ribbon belonged to the stallion. It was plaited into his mane." "He had two ribbons," said Big Tiger. "Take it with you," advised Good Fortune. "A horse gets those ribbons when he wins a race. Take it to the venerable chief as a present, and he'll be very pleased." "Dog," said Christian, "you're no ordinary dog." He stroked the thick head, and then he said again, but in a commanding tone, holding the ribbon under the poodle's nose, "Dog, seek, find." The poodle seemed to have been waiting for just that word. He ran on, his nose close to the ground, until he came to the spot where the trail ceased among the stones. "He's lost the scent," said Good Fortune. "No, he hasn't," cried Christian. "He's only waiting for us." "Is there anything wrong?" asked Affliction, who did not understand. "The dog is showing us the way," Christian explained. "A bit late," said Good Fortune dubiously, but he turned his camel and rode back. They had not yet reached the edge of the dry lake bed when the poodle resumed his trot. Instead of running up the mountainside in the direction of the trail, he turned east and ran across the gravel, which was piled up at the foot of the slope. The camels had to walk slowly, for the stones were slippery and the path was slightly uphill. Presently, the gravelly slope dropped gently into a broad valley with another brown basin-like clay bed. But no hoof marks were to be seen in this one. The poodle ran on ahead. Where the valley narrowed and drifts of sand covered the ground, the tracks could be seen again. The little caravan proceeded uphill for half an hour and was already approaching a plateau and a great clear space when suddenly the poodle disappeared into a side valley. Boulders barred the way. Good Fortune was the first to dismount. The others followed suit. They led their camels between two walls of rock until the gorge widened and they had a clear view into a depression which looked like an abandoned stone quarry. But here, a sight which they never expected met their eyes. High Derisen grass filled the bottom of the basin, and around its edges, between patches of scrub, a few beam trees struggled for life. The wall of rock had collapsed in the middle, and its ruins were spread far around. The landslide which had followed its fall hid the back part of the basin-like depression. There they heard the poodle barking loudly, and he sounded as if he were hopping with joy. The barking came nearer, and as Good Fortune rounded the rubbly slope where the ground was soft, a horseman trotted towards him. He was riding a gray piebald, and Christian recognized the horse at once. "Did you have a good journey?" he asked, bowing to Good Fortune. "Is your rest peaceful, Gunchuk?" Good Fortune replied. "I have neglected my duty by being late," confessed Gunchuk. "Moonlight ordered me to come as far as the dried lake to meet you. You must have started very early." "We were very nearly not getting here," said Affliction, "but the dog led us to you." "May I beg you not to mention this to Moonlight?" cried Gunchuk, alarmed. "Why should we?" said Good Fortune, laughing, "since we're here now. Are you alone?" "Yes," answered Gunchuk, "and I meant to go home as soon as I had met you, but now I can't." "Why can't you?" asked Good Fortune. "Has something happened?" inquired Affliction. "Something is going to happen," declared Gunchuk, pointing to the sky. They all looked up. The sun was stinging, and the little white clouds were no longer scurrying. Two eagles were soaring at a great height, and watching their calm flight, one would think that the air was motionless. The vault of the sky was clear and blue over the walls of rock, except for two transparent white strips, which were coming, the one from the north, the other from the south, to meet like the arch of a bridge which still lacked the keystone. But that was just the point. Gunchuk raised his arms over his head, and when his hands touched, he said significantly, "It will be 3 hours from now." "I hadn't noticed it," said Affliction, "but now I do." Good Fortune merely nodded and said, "We must stir ourselves." He took his camel by the reins and stepped smartly forward. Gunchuk showed the way, but in fact it was visible, for the depression was at an end. The cliffs rose straight over a sandbank and a watery swamp, from which a little stream flowed, in places forming pools, and then losing itself in the Darasen pastures. When they came nearer, they could hear the dripping of water. On the sandbank lay Gunchuk's few belongings, a kettle, a bag, a few blankets, and some harness. "It's safest under the rocks," said Gunchuk. "That is, if a rock doesn't fall, or if the mountainside doesn't collapse." "We're in heaven's hands," replied Good Fortune, and they began to unload. There was firm ground near the sandbank, and Affliction set up the tent. Good Fortune told Big Tiger to water the camels, while Christian went to fetch fresh water. The water was clear and cold, but very shallow. The camels had dispersed along the waterhole, and it looked as if they would drink it dry. "Hold them back," cried Christian, and Big Tiger held back the camels until the cask was full. "Why are you hurrying so much?" he asked Big Tiger. "Don't you know we have 3 hours yet?" "3 hours until what?" asked Big Tiger. "I don't know," confessed Christian, "but something frightful is on the way." "It can't be helped," said Big Tiger, looking at the sky where the white arches of clouds were imperceptibly approaching each other. The eagles were still circling noiselessly overhead. "It's very hot," said Christian, as he set down the water cask in front of Affliction. "Will there be a thunderstorm?" Affliction looked up. He was busy making a dung fire, and that was no easy matter, for he had no wood. When he had put on the kettle and began to prepare the bean noodles, he asked, "What's that you're saying?" "I expect there's a thunderstorm coming," said Christian. "The sun is so hot." "The best weather is in the autumn," declared Affliction. "Not now." "Are thunderstorms good weather?" asked Christian. "They bring rain," said Affliction. "And what's going to come down now?" asked Christian. "Sand," said Affliction, pointing to the two arches of cloud. "My hearty good wishes for 2 or 3 days sound asleep. I hope you'll enjoy it." "Thanks 10,000 times, said Christian. He went to Big Tiger, who was fastening the camel's reins loosely around their necks, as Seven Stars had taught him. "There's a sandstorm coming," he said. "Affliction says it will last 2 or 3 days. "What's all the excitement for?" asked Big Tiger, thinking of the dust storms which swept over Peking in the spring. They came from the Gobi Desert, people said. And everyone went home and mended the holes in the paper windows, and that was all. But then Big Tiger recalled what Good Fortune had said about sandstorms, and he was frightened. "If we're held up here for 3 days," he said, "how shall we be in Ming Shui on the 4th day of the 3rd month? "Mr. Ma will also be held up," Christian reminded him. "He can make up for lost time," said Big Tiger, "but we can't say to Good Fortune, we must march 3 hours longer every day from now on because we have an appointment. Christian scratched his head and said quietly, "We shall have to think hard over this." "Quai, quai," shouted Good Fortune. "If you're finished watering the beasts and drawing water, go gather Argal. The heavens will grant us only a short time more." Christian and Big Tiger went to and fro, gathering all the dung they could find, breaking dried branches from the beam trees and bringing them to Affliction to stow near the fireplace. Gunchuk rode through the pasture, driving the horses before him, but the stallion was not among them. "Should we corral the camels, too?" asked Christian. "It's not necessary," said Gunchuk. "Camels are more sensible than horses. They don't run away. They just lie down." "Food, food," called Affliction. "Hi, Good Fortune. Quai, quai." Good Fortune did not come until everything was in order. He threw back a flap of the tent to have an open view of the pasture. One could see the camels grazing and the boulders of rock between which the stream trickled. One could also see the blue sky with the arches of cloud and high in the air the eagles soaring. While they were all eating their bean noodles, Gunchuk took a piece of dried mutton from his bag and passed it around. "It's better to eat it now without sand," he said. Afterwards, they drank tea, and the poodle got a piece of meat. It might have been towards 4 when the arches of cloud met. The sun was still shining gaily, and Good Fortune was just about to give Gunchuk greetings from his father Naidong, which he hadn't been told to give, but he hoped to start a lengthy conversation this way. Suddenly, however, Affliction stuck out his head, pointed to the sky, and said, "The bad business is beginning." All but Gunchuk looked out to where Affliction's finger was pointing. Christian and Big Tiger were just in time to see 2 dark objects fall from the sky. Just over the rocks, the eagles spread their wings and disappeared. They had taken shelter. Immediately afterwards, the tent became as dark as a cellar. No one noticed the howling of the storm or the tumult with which it broke into the gorge, for a torrent of stones, big and small, came pelting down onto the tent. Evidently, they had been lying on the edge of the rocky plateau. Now they fell straight down, and Good Fortune, who was sitting at the back of the tent on the seat of honor, got the biggest chair and the biggest stones. He screamed. Gunchuk murmured prayers, and his beads slipped through his fingers. Affliction drew his military coat over his head, and Christian and Big Tiger took refuge under the sheepskin coat. Nobody knew how it happened, but suddenly the poodle was in the tent, too, seeking shelter beside Christian. "Good dog," whispered Christian, fondling his wet muzzle. "Don't be frightened," whispered Big Tiger, holding his trembling paw. "Don't be frightened," repeated Affliction bravely, as he fell with the kettle over Good Fortune. The earth trembled and the tent poles were pulled up at least a hand's breadth by the pressure of the air. It lasted only a second, but Good Fortune's thumb was caught under a pole, and when the gust passed, he could not pull it out. There was a frightful thunderclap, a sizzle, and a stink. Fortunately, the stink was only the burning camel dung, which had been soaked by the tea kettle. But the ashes were so hot that they burned the poodle's paws, and he jumped up on Affliction's back. There he lay. Affliction lay too, and Good Fortune couldn't stand up either, for his thumb was still under the pole. Christian and Big Tiger were the first to get on their feet. It was still dark, but the ground no longer trembled. The thunder had ceased, and only a few little stones were whizzing over the tent roof and falling in the grass some distance off. But one could still hear the roaring of the storm and see the clouds of sand swirling about in the rocky basin. The sun hung above like a distant red lamp. The poodle slunk guiltily out of the tent. Gunchuk wound his prayer beads round his wrist and looked around at the survivors. "Has anyone been badly hurt?" he asked. "I haven't," said Christian, proceeding to shake Affliction. "I haven't either," said Affliction, "or not much." He tried to stand up and succeeded. He was pale but relieved. "Accept my condolences," he said. "Good Fortune is done for. I beg the young princes to curb their grief." "What?" screamed Big Tiger. "What are you saying?" "I can't do anything about it," sighed Affliction. "We'd need a lantern." "One can see that without light," said Gunchuk, exerting all his strength to raise the tent pole and get Good Fortune's thumb free. But the thumb, though free, didn't move. "Good Fortune," cried Christian sorrowfully, pushing aside the hand with the thick, swollen thumb. But Good Fortune made no answer, and Gunchuk let the tent pole drop again with a heavy thud. We must call back his spirits. They can't be gone far yet, he advised. Christian filled his silver bowl with water and splashed it in Good Fortune's face. Good Fortune opened his eyes, but his color did not come back for a long time. My head, he moaned. My ears, my neck, I'm hurt all over. Affliction rolled up a felt rug, pushed it under Good Fortune's head, and covered him up with his coat. Lie on your side, he advised. Then the lump on the back of your head won't hurt. What's that? Your shoulder is hurting too? Wait now, I'll look and see if any of the horses are dead. Horse fat makes a grand ointment. He peered out of the tent and saw Gunshuk like a shadow through the reddish clouds of sand. Near him stood four horses at the line. None of them was missing or lying down, for Gunshuk had cautiously set up the line a good distance from the rocky wall. Now that no more stones were falling from the rock face, he moved the line into the shelter of the rock. I thought, said Gunshuk when he came back, that the tent would stand the rain of stones better. I must note that for the future. The future is uncertain, said Good Fortune. The present is all that is certain. And he felt the back of his head to see if the lump was still there. It will get bigger, Affliction consoled him. We have time to wait. He tidied up the tent. Big Tiger swept away the ashes, and Christian hammered back the pegs which had been loosened when the air pressure had lifted the tent. What happened to me? Asked Good Fortune. You've got a misshapen thumb, Affliction informed him. Good Fortune looked at his purple, swollen thumb, but remained heroically silent. Outside, the storm was raging over the cliffs and howling in the clefts, and the sand was falling on the tent like fine rain. Farther off, stones were still dropping on the grass. See to the camels, ordered Good Fortune. He was already recovering. Christian and Big Tiger jumped up, and Gunshuk went with them. As they left the shelter of the cliffs, the strong wind nearly blew away Big Tiger's beautiful fur hat. Number one, cried Gunshuk, pointing to the pack camel, which was lying in the Derisan grass with its back to the wind. Its long neck was stretched on the ground. Its eyes were half shut, but the nostrils were moving. There are no more of them here, muttered Gunshuk, and Christian wondered how he knew. In the semi-darkness through which the clouds of sand swept like veils, they couldn't see 10 yards before them. But just before the storm broke, Gunshuk had looked, not at the eagles, but at the camels, and had noted exactly where they were. So now, like a sleepwalker, he made straight for the spot where he had last seen the second camel, but he found none. Before them rose the outlines of mighty blocks of stone, which had not lain there before, and they stumbled over boulders and sharp-edged rocks and had to make a big detour, for a fresh avalanche of rocks had brought a farther large area of ground into motion, and the landslide was still going on. Watch out, Gunshuk warned. It's very easy to die. Big Tiger and Christian groped after Gunshuk, who himself was groping blindly and was only able to find an outlet to the upper part of the valley when the outlines of the southern cliffs emerged before them. They didn't meet a single camel, but the poodle suddenly appeared running along before them, wagging his tail confidently. Camels also die easily, Gunshuk roared above the storm. They seem, in fact, to like dying, for he wanted to prepare Christian and Big Tiger for the possibility that they might never again find them. But there are some here, cried Christian. At least two, shouted Big Tiger, pointing to tracks in the loosened earth. Gunshuk knit his brows and raised his thumbs in sign of approval. Dog, he shouted, seek, find if you're any good. He pressed the dog's nose down on the camel tracks, but it was no longer necessary. A few steps farther on, they found the four camels huddled closely together.